The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Thank you. I hope we're not too late, and we will make up for it by not keeping you too long. You guys want to sit behind in front?
I'll sit up here.
Okay. So as I had said in the email, I think a lot of this is probably, most of it is largely self-evident, but just kind of covering some of the general details. All full-time first-year students do have we'll call it a mandatory elective. It's an elective because you get to choose. It's mandatory because you have to choose at least one. We've been doing this for a number of years. The real upside is that where in most cases of most law schools, your first year is entirely kind of mandatory, so very little flexibility. We really felt that we want to provide an opportunity as early as possible for students here to start to gain a sense of what some of their interest areas might be or might not be. And so one of the things I would say about the benefit or the opportunity of having class in the spring is while you may be well-intended to move in or well-interested in moving into a particular subject area, it may turn out for you at the end of a spring semester that the area was not exactly what you thought it was going to be. And the great news about that is that you've done it during your first year. You've got two full years plus the summertime to consider other potential areas. So it really is kind of a win-win. Might move you further in a certain direction, might actually move you away from that direction. We've tried to provide, and you'll hear from Deans Verone and Epperson, a real variety so that you can move in a couple of different directions during the spring. They will each share with you, I think, their thoughts about the potential workload. I would say as a general matter, you really should not anticipate too much movement in terms of density between the classes, despite the fact that some are two and some are three credits. So I would not base your decision solely on the fact that you're thinking, well, a three-credit course is going to be that much more work, so I'm going to stick with the two. You can choose to, make that your deal maker if you wish. Yeah, come on, we're not throwing water. Come on up front. There's plenty of room here. You may decide to have that as a factor, but I would not make that the real factor for you. And we can talk some more about that at the end of the day. The other thing that you should know, again, I think most of the memo is self-evident, but there is no rush. There does not need to be a rush to register tomorrow. It's going to have no bearing on how the class is ultimately selected. You have the entire month of November, or I think through the 25th, you can make a decision, and then maybe if you end up meeting with somebody and change your mind, you can go back in and change it. It's going to be the latest time that you went in. We're going to make every effort to give every first-year student their first choice. Mm-hmm. Most years we've gotten close to 100% for all the first-year students, but it's really going to depend on the flavor and the interest that you all have. If we don't get there, it's going to be your second choice. We'll try to make that as few as possible, obviously, and then if we can, make some adjustments through your advanced selection of, courses when we get into the spring for next fall, we can see if that'll factor in. So a couple of the details there. I'm going to stick around so we can certainly take more questions as we go, but I'm going to invite Deans Verone and Epperson to talk a little bit more about the course selection.
Mm-hmm. Why don't I get us kicked off, everybody, just to give you a sense as to why it was that we created this program some years ago. I was on the special projects committee of the faculty when we considered and created this program. I think it was in 2007?
Sounds right.
Eight, something like that. What we aimed to do was essentially to give our students four major benefits in the first year that most first-year students in the country at law schools were not getting, really. And the way that I like to think about them are that they're the four S's, right? One is to give you a small group experience. So most of our classes at WCL tend to be in the first year in the doctrinal area relatively large, much smaller than classes at similarly sized law schools. So at Georgetown, the average class size in the first year is like 125. At GW, it's like 100 and 110. Here, this semester, fortunately, we're at around 75, 76. But what we wanted to do was to give you even a smaller group experience in the first year, still within the relatively doctrinal area. So we know that in rhetoric you have very small classes, fortunately. But we also wanted to give you one additional course that was small. So that's one purpose. Second purpose of these 1L electives was to give you more of a statutory experience. Most of what you are doing in the first year is common law rooted, so judge-made law. And what we wanted to do was to expose you to more of the kind of lawmaking that lawyers have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so that's statutory and regulatory, okay? Regulatory flowing out of statutory. And then the third was more of an ability to allow you to specialize early or on in your law school career. So within first year, to get a sense as to whether the specialization area that you have as your top choice will make sense to you and for you. And what we have seen is that a lot of students take these first year electives with an eye towards either confirming or eliminating their target specialization area. So do it with an open mind, thinking, okay, I am here to do international law and human rights, right? Or I'm here to do intellectual property. And you take that specialty 1L course in the second year. Most of you will get confirmation as you're taking that course that, yes, this is what I want to do. But the other benefit is that a lot of you will think, you know what? Nah, I actually prefer family law. I prefer this area, but, right? So there's that great value. And then finally, skills. A lot of these 1L electives give you the ability to drill down on lawyering skills. Not all of them. So not all of the 1L electives that my colleague Dean Epperson will be talking about in just a second will hit all of these four goals, but that's what we aim to do in toto with this 1L elective program when we launched it in 2007 or 2008. And so you will see that the assortment, the selection of courses, when looked at generally, sort of do these things. Okay? Any questions on any of that before I turn it over to Dean Epperson to walk you through the various options and how this is going to work? Okay,
I'm walking through options. So do they have this? They
yes.
have this already,
not,
right?
Maybe not in front of them.
Not in front of you, but I mean, to get a general sense of what Dean Verona was talking about, the electives are grouped. There are about 10 subject areas, although some of them have multiple sections. And that is based on, as he mentioned, some larger areas that many students have upon entering WCL indicated an interest in. So for example, students who are interested in international law, we have two 1L electives of international law, which means that there are a significant number of spaces for students to be able to try that. In terms of other survey courses that are in areas of particular interest for students that many have listed as being an area of interest, as Dean Verona mentioned, the point of the 1L elective being one that gives you more of an exposure to statutory law and regulatory law, we have two sections, one taught by Dean Verona, of an intro to public law, which is legislation in the regulatory state, which really allows you to drill down more into statutory and regulatory law. And again, a couple of those as electives. The other larger areas that students have expressed interest in include comparative law and development, which is taught by Professor Nicola, environmental law, and then we have some other law and economics with Professor Baker, and then we have some ones that are also specialized, like our IP law and policy course. And then we have one that is on food and drug law, which is taught by Professor Grossman, whom some of you may have right now. And finally, a couple of ones that are slightly more skills-related in particular areas. There's a public interest practice course that's offered by Professor Rick Wilson, who also is the head of our International Human Rights Clinic, as well as an interviewing and counseling course that's offered by Susan Bennett, who heads up our Community and Economic Development Clinic. So those are courses that will be likely more skills-based and also give you a kind of introduction into real lawyering and what lawyers do. So there's, a really great cross-section of options for students, and in many ways you can't go wrong with them because, as Dean Verona said, if you have a particular interest in an area, you might want to dive right in to something like international law. You may feel like after you've spent a semester mired in the doctrine of 1L courses that you want to have a chance to break free and feel like you get a taste of what real lawyers do with interviewing and counseling. And so there are a number of very great opportunities. Most all of these classes are exam courses. There may be one of them that offers a paper at the end of the semester. I believe that's public interest practice. Now, if there are too many in that class, Professor Wilson has said he might actually use an exam at the end. So I think it's for professors, it's dependent upon the number of students. If there's too high a number, we actually can't grade your papers very well. It's easier at the end of the year to grade a large class in an exam style. And then with something like Professor Bennett's, you're going to have other types of exercises that are the method for grading in the class as opposed to a traditional end-of-the-semester exam. So that gives you a sense of what the subject matter is of the first year elective classes. And as Dean Jaffe said, you have a sheet that lists the courses, but each course also has a course description attached, so you can get a little bit more of a sense of the flavor of the subject matter. Do people have questions about that?
Questions about anything?
Or anything.
Mm-hmm. So some of the, I think international law is one of them, mm-hmm. where it says if you take this elective, you can't take this other course. What is the difference between those two courses?
My understanding is that the international law that's listed is the basic foundational international law course, which means then when you go into your second year, and this would be the same for environmental law as well, you've taken the foundational course already. So you would take more advanced courses. If you are indeed interested in international law, the semester was great, you want to keep moving forward in that direction, you've taken the foundational course, and now you can go on to take, you know, some of the upper-level electives that are specialized international courses. You would not, therefore, take Professor Diane Orne-Licker's international law course as a 2L, because you've done it. You've done it. You've covered all that material in your 1L elective.
It's the same course that you would take otherwise as a 2L or 3L.
It just, and this is what Dean Verona was saying, it actually then just gives you, in some senses, a leg up. You've done the foundation. So now in the first semester of your second year, if this, in fact, is an area that interests you, you go straight into more of the specialized courses.
And of note in that regard, maybe in anticipating a question, if you have a particular interest in one of the courses for which we're offering two sections, a specific interest there, go ahead and select one as your first choice and the other one as your second choice. So that's, yes, that is certainly permissible. And that will obviously enhance your chances.
The only other tidbit around course selection strategy is that you cannot take Introduction to Intellectual Property as a 2L or 3L because it's not offered in a 2L or 3L curriculum. So the only time to take that course would be as a first year. The rationale for that is that once you're 2L and 3L, you can take individual courses like copyright, patent, and trademark rather than the survey course that you would otherwise be able to take through this program as a first year.
Mm-hmm. And for those interested in environmental law, it's the same idea. This is the survey course for environmental law. You learn everything that you would learn in the survey course that may be offered by a professor for 2Ls or 3Ls. So once you take it, you've completed that survey environmental law course, and then you can go into more specialized courses like trade in the environment or, you know, other things like that.
Speaking of the international law electives, do the professors for each of those two courses lend their own kind of flair and flavor to the course? And if so, what is it, so that we know if we have a preference in what we kind of like?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I would encourage you to reach out to Professor Mendez and to Professor Chuang to ask them for their syllabi, to ask them that specific question, because my understanding is that they do flavor the course in different ways because of their own experience, expertise areas. They both do a lot around human rights and public international law. I would think that Professor Chuang does a little bit more in terms of private international law than Professor Mendez. But I would encourage you to reach out to them and to ask them that question.
And just to take off on that for a second, a number of you, as Dean Epperson mentioned, maybe all of you, are presently taking at least one course with one professor who's teaching a class in the spring. And I think you can think about that somewhat strategically, again, in either direction. If it's a professor for whom you're maybe enjoying the course or not enjoying the course, but maybe not seeing as eye to eye with the professors you would like, well, some of that flair and the flavor of that professor is going to continue in any class that they teach in the spring.
Yeah.
Conversely, if you're having a positive experience, tuck away for yourself the fact that among the things and the skills you're going to be developing are going to be your contacts with these professionals who are going to be helping you not only beyond the spring, the summer into next year in terms of networking, in terms of letters of recommendation for jobs you're looking for and things like that. So if you're having a good vibe and a good feel with a professor, consider, among other things, that the course may be a good direction to continue deepening that relationship as you start to look for those contacts and way to work with that professor as you proceed.
Do you all know if any of these courses can go ahead and start counting for those of us that are doing dual degrees, like the JDMA in International Affairs?
No. They will, courses during the first year will not.
Okay.
No. Good question.
Does our selection of these have any bearing on our what section we'll be placed in?
No.
None.
Classes will not, none of the classes will conflict with your doctrinal courses.
for that very
reason. Yeah, and you'll notice these are all offered on Monday and Wednesday mornings, so that they work with whatever section you have. Other questions?
Which of the elective courses? So it'll take a little bit of time after, remind me, I think it was November 25th was the final date.
Yeah.
Depending on whether things fall neatly, like meaning automatically everybody shifts or sifts into the class, or we need to spend a little more time working that through, you should have, I want to say, early December, early mid-December, no later than that, certainly before you go away. It's just a matter of how much work we have to do on the selections.
Mm-hmm. And with respect to how we end up placing you, our goal every year has been to give you your first choice or your second choice. So pick carefully so that you put in your first and second choices what it is that you really want to take. So try not to think in terms of, okay, maybe I should pick a third choice that is the course that I want, because if I don't get, think in terms of really being very transparent, because we are being very transparent with you. We will hopefully be able to accommodate everybody in their first or second choices. So make sure that you look at this list and pick the two courses that you would love to be in through this program in the spring, only one of them being the one that you end up in. So have those be first and second picks. Yes.
But you did say that if there's like two sections for that, you could make that your first and second.
I would not do that, because then almost everybody who selects international law as a first choice gets in there, because those are the very large courses.
Okay.
Okay. So I would not do that. Yes.
What is the criteria that you guys use to pick which student goes to what? Like, say, if I want to go to international law, human rights. Closer to human rights and private property, private rights.
Whether you put them in your first position or second, that's all we look at.
It's going to have nothing to do with the student as an individual.
And then we sort of randomize. If too many students select as one course their first pick, then we put them into their second pick, and we randomize the students that get into the first pick. See what I mean? So it's very fair and across the board. Yes.
I noticed there's like a slight difference between two of the international law courses that are offered. One is more of a public law focus, and the other does not. If our choice is international law, but we're not necessarily as interested in public interest, is the difference so great that putting the public interest international law as a second choice?
My understanding has been that students who select one of the two international law options as their first choice get that option, because the room is big enough and we don't have a 45 student target for those courses, because we have so many first year students that want them. So I would just put whichever one of the two you would like to take in the first slot, and then I don't know. Do you want them to put as the second pick the other one?
I mean, I don't want to leave you with mixed opinions on it. Back to your question, and that one, I might slightly differ with you. I mean, if you still want to get the flavor for international law, and you're not as wed as the student said in the back, I only want to focus on public versus private side or whatnot, but you really want to be in there. I mean, we don't know. Dean Verona is absolutely correct. We're using past information, but the disclaimer says past information is not a prediction of, current decision. If the entire class selects those two, we're not planning on adding additional sections of international law, so we're going to have to make some decisions. So my view would be, if you really want to have that subject area, I would probably have you select first and second.
But I do think that Rebecca would put them in the other international law section, even if they've selected the other section as their first choice. See what I mean? I think that's how she's been doing it.
Okay.
But is that not your understanding?
Is your question, though, that if you're interested in international law, you would only want to be in one section? Are you using the example of, I would only want this one section of international law that seems to have more of a private law focus, and I would not choose as my second choice the more publicly focused international law, I would choose another course?
I guess my question is really more, I'm more interested in private than public, but if public is so intertwined and still very much related with private, then I would be interested in putting the public interest law as my second choice.
I see.
Only if it had.
I think the best workaround then would be to give us that information on the form. Okay? Tell us that preference somehow in how you select these various courses. There's I think that there's a comment section.
A space for that.
So you would be able to tell us that, right? So if you say put in one of the two international law sections in your first position and then public interest in your second, you could tell us in the little comment section, I only want that one section of international law, so don't put me in the other section ahead of putting me in public interest. Or if you wanted, you could do the opposite. I want to take international law. I don't care the section. I don't care about the section. So I put that in the first position, and in the second position I have somebody else, but that's my preference.
So I checked with Dean Davis so we were consistent, particularly on the podcast.
Yeah,
she would confirm and suggest that if you're interested in international law, pick it first, pick it second. Because if you do pick another course second and you don't get into the first, she's going to assume your second choice was that second.
Good. That's essentially what we just said. Okay. Refining our initial advice. Okay, good. Other questions? Concerns?
I know Dean Verona said this, but I want to be on record as repeating it. Don't get too caught up in this. Students are, you're getting somewhat properly, slightly stressed about some things, and that's, I don't want you to stress a lot about those things either. This should not be a big one. This is not going to be a deal breaker.
No.
You're either going to love what you do in the course. You might not like it. You might end up hating it. I doubt that's really going to be the case, but it's going to be another course you take in the spring, and that's, don't make too much of it. So, if you're not sure and nothing's there, you wish that we had immigration law, which we don't have this spring, so you're totally up in the air, then put them all up on a dartboard and, throw it two times out of three and pick one, because you've got great professors regardless, and it's going to be an enjoyable course regardless of what you select for the spring. So just don't make too much of it. All right?
Okay.
All right.
In terms of the public law course, you're teaching now, are there equivalents like the following fall or things like that, or is this kind of an overview, kind of like we were saying with I think they were talking about like the IP law kind of thing,
yeah,
where that's like an overview, like is that what
it is like? Sort of an overview. Public law does not have an analog in the upper level. Public law is a combination of legislation, administrative law, election law, and so you could take all of those courses individually, independently of each other. Later on, but public law in the first year gives you a good introduction to those areas. Yeah.
Is there a big difference in your course in public law than Professor?
No. Mark and I created the course as a team, and we teach it at the exact same time so that we can come together in plenary sessions once or twice during the term. Once for a practitioner's panel, another time, perhaps for a big case study that we do as one big section. Yeah.
Is there an analog for environmental law in the upper level courses?
Well, there is, but that's an example of one where if you take the 1L elective for environmental law, it is the foundational course, and therefore you don't take the environmental law foundational course as a 2L. You're done with that. Then you would go into specialized courses.
Okay. Well, I mean, the reason I was asking is because, if I'm interested in more than one subject area here, is there a further course if I take international law?
Yeah. Other questions? Well, if you have additional questions, feel free to email them to us. Mm-hmm. So if you have that esprit de couloir problem where you go out and all of a sudden you go, oh, I wish I had, right? So the regret of the corridor, as the French say, then just email us, and we will be able to answer your question.